Nemoto presents AI, an uncertain future. AI, labor, wages, and the consumer paradox. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 26 minutes. Machines do not unionize, demand raises, or sleep. In a growing number of workplaces, they also do much of the work once done by people. On an assembly line, robotic arms weld and rivet with tireless precision while a few technicians monitor screens. In a customer support center, automated agents handle routine inquiries, escalating only complex cases to a dwindling pool of human reps. In an office, software scripts sort data and draft reports that entry-level staff use to prepare. In each place, productivity climbs, but the payroll shrinks. Fewer people touch the product or service. The fundamental economic loop begins to fray. Wages pay for consumption, and consumption drives production. On the highways, autonomous trucks shuttle goods with only a skeleton crew of remote monitors in place of long-haul drivers. In retail aisles, automated checkout kiosks and shelf-scanning robots quietly replace clerks and stockers. No sector is untouched by the push to efficiency. Everywhere, the story repeats. Productivity climbs, but the payroll thins out. When labor's role in production is slashed, who remains to buy what the machines make? For two centuries, each wave of technology has raised alarms about mass unemployment, from the textile mills that worried the Luddites to the ATMs that threatened bank tellers. Each time, new kinds of work emerged. After ATMs took over routine cash transactions, banks redefined teller roles towards sales and customer service. Branches even hired more staff as operating costs fell and customer demand grew. Overall employment kept rising, and work weeks gradually shortened as productivity increased. Automation alone did not put society out of work. Instead, jobs evolved and living standards improved. This historical pattern feeds a common optimism. Yes, AI will destroy certain jobs, but it will also create new and better ones, perhaps entire industries that cannot yet be imagined. People adapted before and, optimists argue, they will adapt again. But even the optimists acknowledge that this time might be different. The new tools are not just faster looms or more convenient spreadsheets, they are general-purpose cognition engines. A single advanced model can compose emails, draft legal clauses, write code, analyze images, and optimize logistics routes. In both white-collar offices and on factory floors, automation is encroaching on what were once considered uniquely human skills. Unlike past machines that replaced human muscle or sped up routine calculations, these systems challenge a much broader swath of work. They threaten to pull out rungs across the job ladder simultaneously, narrowing the path for workers to climb into better paid roles. Some high-skill, creative, and technical jobs will flourish with AI's help, but many mid-skill positions, the internships, apprenticeships, junior analyst roles that once developed talent, may fade away. If the ladder's lower and middle rungs rot, fewer people will ascend to the top. The early evidence is unsettling. Firms that integrate AI extensively see immediate efficiency gains and cost savings. Fewer clerks, assistants, and coordinators are needed when software can file forms, scan invoices, draft basic content, or triage customer queries. Those who own the algorithms and the data, often a small cohort of tech vendors and top-tier clients, reap most of the efficiency dividend as profit. Meanwhile, for workers, the impact appears as slower hiring, stagnating wages, and vanishing entry-level opportunities. The term wage compression comes into play. Productivity rises, but the gains aren't translating into broad income growth. Instead, they concentrate as returns to capital and to a thin layer of highly specialized tech workers who design or deploy the AI. Over time, this pattern hollows out the middle class, leaving a polarized workforce of a few well-paid experts and many in lower-paid, precarious service roles that can't easily be automated away. Economists note that even before this AI wave, labor's share of national income was declining while returns on capital were rising. Without intervention, AI may turbocharge that trend, tilting economic rewards further toward those who own the machines and the platforms. Optimists counter that alongside the displacement, new types of employment will emerge. They point to burgeoning roles in the AI economy. Prompt engineers who craft model inputs, data curators who prepare training sets, robot maintenance specialists, AI ethics consultants, and so on. The hopeful vision is that as routine work is automated, human effort will shift to tasks machines can't do: strategic planning, creative design, complex interpersonal services. And indeed, continuous learning and reskilling will be essential in an AI-driven economy. But these new roles often demand advanced education or capital, and their numbers are relatively small. A warehouse that automates with robots might hire a few robot technicians, but it no longer needs dozens of pickers and packers. The challenge is that it's easier to list the jobs being lost than to confidently name enough new jobs to absorb millions of displaced workers at comparable pay. Retraining programs can help some transition to new fields, but the scale and speed required are daunting. Not everyone can become a machine learning engineer or robotics designer, nor will the market need millions more of such specialists. Even with better education and lifelong learning, there may simply be fewer traditional jobs per capita in a heavily automated economy, unless society fundamentally redefines what productive employment means. This brings us to the emerging consumer paradox. Businesses need consumers with spending power, yet widespread automation quietly saws at the branch on which consumer demand sits. If a company uses AI to cut its workforce by 30%, that's 30% of its employees who no longer have income to spend, and eventually 30% fewer customers with money in their pockets. Multiply that across industries. If efficiency gains are achieved chiefly by removing humans from production, who buys the products and services that fuel growth? In the past, this paradox resolved itself through new industries and rising wages. Technological revolutions, from the tractor to the personal computer, increased overall wealth and created new kinds of work, which in turn put money back into circulation. But in a future of pervasive AI automation, that virtuous cycle is not guaranteed. With too few people earning enough to consume, aggregate demand could structurally weaken even as the capacity to produce soars. One possible outcome, if nothing is done, is a high-tech economy that excels at producing goods and services with minimal human labor, a world of plenty for those who control the technology, and precarity for everyone else. Picture a society where a significant share of routine tasks, and even many professional ones, have been handed over to machines and algorithms. The median worker's wage stagnates or falls because their labor is less needed, while profits and capital income accrue to the owners of automation. To keep consumer spending alive, stopgap measures proliferate. Households lean on credit, buy now, pay later plans, endless refinancing, micropayments, and subscriptions to make up for lost wages. Digital platforms gamify consumption itself, offering points, tokens, and loyalty rewards that feel like earning but aren't. Scrolling through an app might earn you virtual coins to redeem for products, giving the impression of income where there is none. All of this can mask, but not resolve, the fundamental issue. Points aren't paychecks, and coupons aren't a livelihood. People remain participants in the consumer economy, but on increasingly fragile footing, cushioned by gimmicks rather than genuine earning power. Policymakers see this paradox and have begun floating more direct solutions. One idea is a universal basic income, a regular stipend given to every citizen to keep purchasing power alive even if the market no longer provides a job for everyone. UBI promises a floor below which no one falls, ensuring that even in a highly automated society, people have money to meet basic needs and perhaps a bit more. During periods of extreme technological transition, such cash transfers could indeed prevent societal freefall by propping up demand and alleviating poverty. But the concept raises as many questions as it answers. How would a large-scale UBI be funded long-term, through higher taxes on remaining workers or on corporate profits or new wealth taxes? Would it be truly universal and unconditional, or would strings be attached? And beyond the economic calculus, what happens to community and purpose if work is no longer central to most people's lives? A shift from "I contribute, therefore I earn" to "I receive because society owes me" would mark a profound change in the social contract, with unpredictable effects on morale and motivation. Implemented gently, a basic income could give society breathing room to adjust. In a humane scenario, UBI might enable people to pursue education, creative arts, caregiving, or volunteer service without the crushing pressure to take any job available. Freed from desperation, individuals could invest time in upskilling or in roles that AI can't perform, the classic examples being caring for others or community leadership. This soft landing vision imagines AI handling the drudgery while humans explore higher endeavors, a kind of renaissance of creativity and civic engagement funded by the productivity of machines. But a darker scenario is also easy to imagine. In a harsh implementation, UBI becomes a tool for pacification. A populace dependent on stipends could slip into passivity, its political voice muted by the fear of losing the monthly check. With nothing expected from them, some people's days might dissolve into aimless screen time, low-cost indulgences, and the quiet despair that comes from lacking any role that is needed by others. In the extreme, a basic income system could even be used to enforce conformity. The stipend might come with hidden strings, reducible if an algorithm finds one's behavior or speech deviant from whatever norms the administrator set. What was meant as a safety net could double as a leash. The term bread and circuses comes to mind, except now augmented by machine learning, offering endless personalized distraction to keep the public docile. The risk is that UBI, implemented without care, morphs into a subtler form of societal control, a well-designed interface that delivers sustenance and entertainment while quietly nudging behavior in approved directions. In such a future, the loss would be not only economic agency, but personal agency, a slow hollowing out of ambition and civic muscle in exchange for comfort. Ultimately, where the money flows is at the heart of the matter. Every time a model replaces a worker, a wage stream is diverted into a profit stream. Today, that profit flows to shareholders and technology providers. If the public doesn't share in the gains of automation, inequality becomes an engineered outcome rather than an unfortunate side effect. But this trajectory is not inevitable. It is a matter of design and policy. There are at least three levers that could help redirect the flow of AI-driven wealth into broader hands. First, broaden the ownership of the machines. If workers, communities, or governments hold equity in AI systems and platforms, then a portion of the gains circle back to the populace. This could take many forms: cooperative enterprises where employees collectively own the AI that enhances or replaces their work, public trusts that invest in major AI firms on behalf of citizens, or requirements that companies give workers affected by automation a stake in the productivity boost. The principle is simple. As labor's direct role in production diminishes, labor's financial stake in production must increase so that people still have claim to the fruits of progress. For example, if a warehouse eliminates 100 jobs through robots, perhaps those displaced workers, or the community, receive an ownership share or dividend rights in the automated operation. Then, rather than being cut out of the prosperity loop, they remain stakeholders in it. Second, recognize data and digital contributions as a form of labor to be compensated. AI models are not born in a vacuum. They are trained on vast troves of human-created data, writings, art, code, behavioral patterns. Treating all that data as raw material free for the taking is akin to a company harvesting resources without paying. A regime of data rights and royalties could change that. Artists, authors, and everyday internet users might receive micro-compensation when their creations or personal data fuel profitable AI models. On a larger scale, companies drawing on public data sets might pay into a collective fund for digital infrastructure or education. By establishing that data has value and that those who generate it deserve a share, we turn passive extraction into a negotiated exchange. It won't be trivial. Systems to track and credit data contributions are complex. But the concept is that the wealth created from our collective information should not accrue solely to those who aggregate and algorithmically refine it. Third, use policy to favor AI that amplifies human workers rather than replaces them. This means redesigning tax codes, subsidies, and procurement policies so that companies have incentives to keep humans in the loop. Currently, businesses can often save money by automating a task and laying off staff. What if, instead, they got larger tax breaks for every productive employee working alongside AI and fewer or none, for each role completely automated away? Governments could, for instance, reduce payroll taxes for firms that use AI to boost the output of existing teams, while imposing higher taxes or fees on firms that use AI to operate with a skeletal workforce. Public sector contracts, a huge influence on industry, could require bidders to show how their AI systems will support human jobs rather than eliminate them. In short, shape the economic environment so that AI plus human is more rewarding than AI instead of human. Over time, this could guide innovation itself. Entrepreneurs and engineers, responding to market signals, would develop technologies aimed at complementing workers, making a radiologist twice as effective with AI assistance, rather than displacing them, making the radiologist irrelevant. Consider how different the future could look under these policies. Take the earlier example of Lila, the insurance claims processor. In a replacement-oriented world, the AI system's success in cutting her workload might be celebrated purely for cost savings, and Lila's job would be at risk. In a complement-oriented world, however, her company might redeploy Lila to focus on the toughest cases and on customer relationships, using the AI to handle the rote paperwork. They might even retrain her to oversee a small team of AI-assisted processors, expanding service volume and quality. She would remain employed and perhaps even see her role enriched, not diminished. Moreover, if that company had an inclusive ownership model, Lila might also receive dividends from the very AI that transformed her job. She would benefit both as a worker and as a stakeholder. Multiply this vision by millions. A teacher might use AI to personalize lesson plans, but the teacher's role would become more valued, not less, as a mentor and guide to students navigating an AI-rich world. A doctor might leverage AI diagnostic tools to catch issues early, but her human judgment and empathy would define the patient experience, and she would treat more complex cases that truly need her expertise. A local journalist might let an AI system summarize routine news briefs, freeing time to dig into investigative stories that hold the powerful to account, reaffirming the importance of the press. In such a scenario, AI becomes an instrument of human amplification. We build an economy where the technology makes ordinary people more capable, more creative, and more productive, not one where it makes them redundant. None of this will happen automatically. It requires deliberate choices and governance that is willing to intervene in market trends. But it's not a fantasy, it's a reframing of progress. For decades, we have measured innovation by efficiency and output gains alone. The AI era challenges us to measure it by distribution and empowerment as well. Are people broadly better off, or just a few owners of capital? That is the test. If raw efficiency is pursued without care, we could end up with an economy that produces plenty but excludes many, a formula for instability. If, however, we redirect innovation to augment, and include, we can have a future where technology's benefits are widely shared and where human work still has dignity and purpose. Another significant lever in adapting to a labor-light economy is time itself. If machines enable greater output with fewer workers, society could take some of those gains in the form of shorter work hours rather than higher output. The idea of a 4-day workweek or a 6-hour workday has gained traction as automation advances. Historically, as noted, many countries went from a 6-day to a 5-day workweek in the early 20th century as productivity climbed, a social choice to give people more rest and family time. In our century, despite massive efficiency gains from computers and globalization, the standard workweek has barely budged. Instead of further reducing hours, we often see underemployment for some and overwork for others. Embracing shorter workweeks could spread available work among more people and improve quality of life. Trials in various companies and even national pilot programs have found that a 4-day week can maintain or even improve productivity while significantly boosting worker well-being. It turns out that well-rested, secure employees often accomplish as much in 32 hours as stressed ones do in 40. This hints that freeing up time need not hurt the economy. It can simply make it more humane. Of course, shifting an entire society's work rhythm is no simple task. It requires rethinking wage structures, perhaps retraining workers for job-sharing arrangements, and overcoming cultural biases that equate long hours with virtue. But if automation truly delivers more output with less labor, reducing work hours could be a rational and fair adjustment, ensuring the benefits of automation translate into leisure and improved health rather than just higher profits or unemployment lines. It's another example of how the fruits of AI can be directed towards a more leisurely, balanced life for many, or concentrated as wealth and surplus for few. Beyond the spreadsheets and economic indicators, we must consider the human and social impacts of a transition to machine-driven work. Work has long been a source of more than income. It provides structure to the day, a sense of identity. I am a nurse, an electrician, a teacher, and a feeling of contributing to something larger. When meaningful work disappears from a community, the void left behind is profound. One can walk through towns and regions that lost manufacturing or mines and feel the emptiness. The shops and diners closed, the social clubs disbanded, an opioid epidemic taking root among those who lost their livelihood and sense of purpose. We're already seeing glimmers of this in the early 21st century, communities where secure jobs have been replaced by gig work and perpetual uncertainty, where young people don't see a clear future, where frustrations bubble over into political anger or despair. If AI accelerates these trends without a plan, the social fabric in many places could fray further. Loneliness, substance abuse, deaths of despair. These are not just individual tragedies, but societal warning lights. A future that treats a significant portion of people as superfluous will not remain peaceful or stable for long. It will require ever more sophisticated distractions or controls to manage unrest. Far better to avoid reaching that point by keeping people meaningfully engaged in the first place. None of this is to say that AI's advance must be a tragedy for workers. It absolutely does not have to be. The same technologies that can displace labor can, in a different framework, liberate people from drudgery and empower them to be more creative and productive than ever. The outcome depends on choices made now, before automated systems simply become the default. Governments can update laws to predistribute AI gains and guard against exploitation. Educational institutions can double down on teaching the uniquely human skills and emphasize creativity, critical thinking, and interpersonal abilities that machines can't replicate. Businesses can choose models that treat employees as valuable assets to be enhanced by AI, not costs to be cut. And citizens in their roles as voters, consumers, and community members can push for the vision of the future they want, one where technology serves humanity, not the other way around. In the end, as the era of AI unfolds, the outcome turns on who owns the technology and for whose benefit it is deployed. It is a question of power. If left to pure market forces, we may get a hyper-efficient economy that undermines its own consumer base and corrodes social cohesion. But if guided by thoughtful policy, we can harness AI to build a more inclusive prosperity. The imbalance between production and consumption will have to be resolved by design rather than by disaster. The opportunity before us is to do just that, to shape a future where the machines amplify human potential and their bounty is shared. That means demanding that the wealth created by automation circulates back to the hands and communities that enabled it. It means valuing contributions that cannot be automated, caring, teaching, creating, serving, and rewarding them, not squeezing them out. The story of technology has always been in our hands. AI is no different. It will make us unnecessary, or it will make us more capable, depending on how we set the rules. The question, what are people for when machines can do so much, is looming, and it requires an answer grounded in justice, dignity, and foresight. We must answer it by building an economy that does not measure success by the exclusion of human labor, but by the enrichment of human lives. The belt still hums in the automated warehouse, and algorithms quietly make more decisions each day. How we respond will determine whether that hum becomes the soundtrack of a thriving commonwealth or of a society adrift.